help but stir. Those who were strong in the ways of necromancy woke the unquiet dead without intending to. Tamra's face was pale and strained. Neferata could hear the murmur of the ghosts from where she stood. The broken kings spoke to the voivode of the Drac, pleading their case. Arkan had only confirmed her suspicions in that regard. Tamra Vendrak was infinitely more useful than her fellows, and had the potential to be more useful still, should she survive the battle to come. Already a plan was forming in Neferata's mind. Perhaps this spot would serve for a final stand, and more besides. She pushed the thought aside. She had fears to allay. "Do not fear. You shall not defend them alone," she said, looking at Bolgu. "Reinforcements are all around us, in the deep waters and the high crags. We shall draw the foe in and catch him in a vice of bone and flesh."
"The high crags? You mean you would seek out the Prince of Crows?"
Bolgu said with a start.
"That beast has been raiding our camp since before I was born, and they've only grown bolder in recent months. My sister had a child snatched through an open window."
"Lucky woman," Neferata said. "Ancient enmities must be put aside if we are to survive. We all serve Nagash, living, dead or otherwise. The ghoul tribes will join us in war, either as they are or as ambulatory corpses. There is no third option." She glanced at Tamra. "I will go into the hills tomorrow. You will accompany me. A representative from the clans should be there, as a show of good faith." Tamra ducked her head. "As you will, O Queen." "Such a nice girl," Neferata said, glancing at Arkan. The leash looked away. The undead wolves pierced the curtain of snow like black arrows, a few at first, then more, then hundreds, loping across the ice fields towards the Rotbringer camp with a speed no living creature could match. Pus-veined horses reared, whinnying in fear as they yanked at their pickets. Sentries retreated into the camp, bawling for aid. The Rotbringers had only just begun to settle in to wait out the storm. It had come upon them suddenly, not 2 days since they'd fought their way through the latest horde of stumbling corpses to come between the servants of Nurgle and their goal. The storm's fury was such that it had made pressing forward impossible. Even the Rotbringer's endurance had its limits. Barely a third of the tents were up, and warriors scrambled to retrieve their weapons. Festabite stepped into Walgus's tent.
"Blightmaster, we are beset by wild beasts."
"Not just beasts, I think,"
Walgus said, pushing past Festabite.
"Beasts do not move with such discipline or come in such numbers."
"Dead walkers,"
Festabite said. The wind had grown fierce, and eerie howls slithered through the encampment. Snarls and screams filled the air, and low, gaunt shapes darted into the tents and atop wagons, eyes burning with sorcerous malignity.
"Something very much like them."
Walgus hefted his shield.
"Come, let us see them off."
Together the two knights trudged into battle. The snow fell thickly, making it impossible to see more than a sword's length ahead. Snarling lupine shapes sprang at them from every direction. Muffled though it was, Festabite could hear the rattle of weapons and the sound of steel biting flesh. Others were fighting back. There was no time to retrieve Scab. The horse thing would have to protect itself as best it could. The Rotbringer camp stretched for miles in every direction. It was a massive, sprawling jungle of tents and wagons, crudely divided into 7 circles. Each circle was under the overall command of one of Walgus's subordinates, and under ideal circumstances, any of them would be capable of repulsing an attack. While the fanatics and the beast herds made do with what they had, the tents for the Order's armsmen were set up in concentric circles, with rough avenues from the outer circle to the inner. Stakes dipped in pox broth jutted from the outer perimeters, and heavy boil-encrusted pavises, each the height of 2 men, lined the outside of the outer ring of tents, protecting them from arrows. None of this, however, deterred the wolves to any appreciable degree. They bounded past the stakes and winnowed between the pavises. They tore through tents, savaging those they found within. Horse things galloped through the camp, harried by slavering wolves, and lone warriors soon found themselves overwhelmed and buried beneath a pile of hairy bodies. Slowly, Walgus and Festabite were joined by others as they pushed through the camp. Blight kings, armsmen, wild-eyed beastmen, and even a few pox monks chanting frenzied hymns to Nurgle as they wielded mace and flail in his name. The growing band fought its way towards a light which blazed up from the camp's centre. Warm and noxious, the light melted the snow on the air and provided a welcome beacon for the struggling Rotbringers. Warriors flocked to it from throughout the camp, fighting their way through a snapping gauntlet of undead beasts. Plaguebearers stalked the edges of the light, hacking down any corpse wolf that got too close. The Order's mortal warriors staggered between this unnatural barricade and fell, panting, to the ground. Festabite was not surprised to see Gurm at the light's heart. The Herald of Nurgle was still sat atop his palanquin. The twisted Sylvaneth had sprouted jewel-like seed pods which pulsed with a baleful radiance, and the ground about them steamed.
"Walgus, my lad,"
Gurm chortled, waving them towards him.
"I am most pleased to see that you are not filling the belly of one of these curs. I was about to send my flies to look for you."
"Your concern warms the cockles of my heart, Herald," Walgus said. "These things are being controlled, aren't they?"
"However did you guess?"
Gurm licked his lips.
"You can practically taste the death magic on the air, and some of these beasts were dead before this realm was a gleam in its creator's eye."
"Like the bone giant earlier," Walgus said. "A trap. They wanted us to camp so that we might provide easy meat for these creatures."
"Then let us show them we are not such easy prey," Festabite said.
A plaguebearer squalled as a wolf knocked it sprawling. Before it could react, the demon was dragged out of the light and into the hissing snows by the lupine zombie. Festabite glanced at Gurm.
"Not all of us, at any rate."
"We endure,"
Gurm said a trifle defensively.
"That is what Nurgle made us to do."
"No, I will not stand here and die."
Walgus hefted his sword.
"I am a Blightmaster of the Order of the Fly, and I will not perish in so unworthy a fashion."
He glanced at Festabite.
"Are you with me, my friend?"
"Where you lead, my lord, I shall always follow," Festabite said.
Walgus nodded and stepped towards the edge of the light.
"I do not know what fell spirit inhabits these husks, but whoever you are, reveal yourself,"
he cried, as he slapped a snarling wolf out of the air.
"Or do you lack the courage for anything other than half-hearted attempts at assassination? Show yourself. Face me in honourable combat, and perhaps Nurgle shall move me to grant you clemency."
"I don't think they're listening,"
Festabite said, as a half-rotted corpse slammed into his shield, jaws snapping. The wolf looked as if it had been dead for months, and it smelled worse. Although under different circumstances, Festabite thought he might have enjoyed the pungent aroma. Its teeth shattered on his shield, and he cleaved the beast's skull in two.
"Oh, he's listening,"
Gurm said. Pestilential vines had sprouted from the ground around his palanquin, and a quartet of nearby wolves was caught in their writhing embrace. The corrupted Sylvaneth, who made up Gurm's chair, shrieked in fierce agony as they manipulated the whipping tendrils. The wolves thrashed as the vines pierced their mouldering flesh and inundated them. Eventually, the vine-shrouded shapes went still. Pus-coloured blossoms sprouted on them, and the vines snapped away from their issuers with a squelching hiss.
"He who?" Walgus demanded. "Who attacks us?"
"Why, Nagash, of course," the demon said. "I thought I made that clear earlier."
Walgus shook his head.
Impossible. He is dead.
So are they, Gurm said. He gestured to a broken-backed wolf as it dragged itself towards Walgus.
Everything in these cursed lands is dead or soon to die. It does not seem to hinder them overmuch.
Out in the snows, something howled.
Nagash,
Festabite murmured. The name tasted strange to him, like a curse whose meaning escaped him. It was said in the seeping halls of Cankerwall that the Lord of Decay and his brothers in darkness had sealed Nagash away in a crypt of forgotten moments, burying him in the weft of time itself. But he'd been freed by the false god Sigmar, and together they had sought to impose hideous, unchanging stagnancy on the realms of men. Walgus stomped on the dead wolf's skull.
Nagash is dead. The three-eyed king broke him, and his legions with him.
He chopped through the spine of another, his rot sword eating away at its bones.
Death is not the end in this realm, not even for its ruler,
Gurm said.
These are delays, nothing more.
But why? Walgus said. He turned to Gurm.
Speak, Herald. What does the King of All Flies say?
Only that you must press forward, Blightmaster. Ever forwards, never backwards. That is the way of it. We must drag this place from its stupor and make of it a garden. And quickly. That is your charge and mine.
The last of the wolves had fallen, but the howls continued. Festabite turned, scanning the camp. He could still hear the sounds of fighting, though dimly, and the screams. He blinked. For a moment, he thought he'd seen something larger than any wolf prowling through the tents. The howls rose with the wind. Full of need and rage such as he had never known, they pierced Festabite clean through. He looked about and saw that he was not alone in this. Even Walgus looked taken aback.
What is it?
The Blightmaster demanded.
Speak, Gurm. Tell me.
Something worse than a wolf,
the Herald said. The demon rose to his feet and chopped through one of the glowing seed pods. He tossed it to Festabite.
Cast that into the snows. It will take root where it falls and give us more light.
The seed pod convulsed in his hand like a thing in pain. Glowing pus dribbled down his armour as he stepped forwards and hurled it out into the storm. Where it fell, the snow instantly turned to steam, and fetid brambles sprouted. More glowing seed pods emerged from the fast-growing brambles, washing the area around them in hazy light. Festabite was so preoccupied by this sudden vibrancy that he failed to notice the enormous shape speeding towards him through the snow. A shout from Walgus caused him to turn. Something massive caught him by the head. A moment later he was wrenched from his feet and slung bodily through a sagging tent. He hit the ground hard and lay for a moment, trying to catch his breath. As he forced himself to his feet, he found himself surrounded by the bloated shapes of ogres. But they were unlike any ogre he'd ever seen. Their forms swelled and shrank with the storm, and their eyes were hollow with hunger. They'd gnawed their lips to tatters, and each was missing a portion of flesh and muscle from its bulky frame. They stretched cold, blackened fingers towards him. He swept his sword out, but it passed cleanly through the cloudy shapes. A howl bristled upwards as they closed in on him. Two solid blows rained down on his shield, crumpling it with monstrous ease. Hands scrabbled at his head and ankles. With a growing sense of panic, he realised that while they could easily touch him, he couldn't say the reverse was true. Festabite ducked his head and bawled through the ghostly ogres, eliciting a howl of frustration as he slipped their grasp. More of the hungry ghosts appeared, floating or shuffling through the snow. He saw one slide its greedy fingers into the chest of a hapless Blight King, removing the warrior's heart with a triumphant groan. Another descended on a fleeing Rotbringer and swallowed him up whole, leaving behind a contorted corpse curled up in the snow as it moved on to its next victim. The camp echoed with the screams of dying men and the howls of the barbarous spirits. Everywhere he looked, ogres moved through the camp, slaying anything who stood against them. Even the plague bearers were having difficulty. As he watched, one unlucky demon was caught between two of the cannibal spirits and torn asunder with a wet squelch. He heard a voice call out and turned to see Walgus striding towards him, his sword burning with a malignant light. The ancient runes etched into the blade pulsed wetly as the Blightmaster swept it out and removed the head of one of the murderous spirits.
"Sir Festerbite, look out!"
Festerbite whirled around, but it was too late. The spectral ogre caught him up in its semi-tangible paws and tore at him in a frenzy. It ripped his shield from his arm and dented his warplate. Festerbite screamed and chopped at it, trying to break its hold. His weapon passed through it harmlessly, but even so it hurled him aside. Bleeding, he shoved himself back to his feet. The ogre reached for him again, but stopped as a black blade emerged from its chest. The spirit arched in agony and clawed at itself as its form came apart like smoke on the wind. Walgus stepped through its fading shape and caught Festerbite's arm.
"Let's get you back into that light of Gurm's. It seems to pain them somewhat."
"Your sword?"
"I had this sword from the festering seers of Plax. The contagions woven into its steel affect even the dead. Plague fire seems to work as well. Would that we had a few more sorcerers in our ranks."
He slipped Festerbite's arm over his shoulder.
"Come, good Sir Knight. I'll not leave one of my brothers to the mercy of such bestial spirits."
Festerbite's limbs were mostly in working order by the time they reached Gurm and his light. More seed pods had been distributed, creating a makeshift barricade of pestilent foliage. The ogres cringed back from the light, gnashing their broken fangs soundlessly, before turning to seek easier prey. Outside the circle of noxious light, the fell spirits continued to ravage the camp. Occasionally, Festerbite would glimpse a flash of plague fire or hear an agonized howl. The spectres weren't having it all their own way. There were some in the Order who possessed mystical blades or sorcerous abilities, which made them a match for the ethereal dead. But not many. Not enough. Festerbite dabbed at his wounds.
"Maybe we should have stayed in Gairan," he murmured.
Heads nodded and agreements were murmured.
"And leave this realm to suffer so?"
Walgus asked, looking around.
"No, this is a pretty trap, I admit, but we will endure it as we always have."
He shook his head.
"You hear, spirits? You cannot break our will, for it has already been broken, and our bodies are made of sterner stuff than bone and meat. Come upon us in wrath or in silence, and still we will triumph. Delay us, and we will only fight all the harder. Death might be inevitable, but so too are we."
Festerbite couldn't contain the phlegm-choked cheer that welled up in his throat. The others joined him, until all of their voices were raised in a cry of defiance. Outside the demon light, the dead continued their attack. But it would be over soon enough. The night always ended, and the storm always abated. Some of them would survive, enough to continue the crusade, enough to wipe the north clean, and make of it a garden fit for a god. Walgus thrust his sword into the ground and spread his arms, as if daring whatever force was controlling the dead to come and face him.
"Do you hear me?" he cried. "Are you listening? This is the moment we were created for. We are the Knights of the Order of the Fly, the chosen sons of Nurgle. And we are implacable as the passage of time itself."
Chapter 6. The Prince of Crows.
"This realm is mine. All that endures within it is mine. Every soul, every mind, all are one with the great necromancer. I see through every eye and speak through every voice. My blood seeps through the broken earth, and the fire of my wrath ignites the sun.
The Epistle of Bone. Tamra stood on the edge of the crag, surveying the horizon. The sky here was streaked with shimmering ribbons of coloured light. The mandible was but a distant speck, limned by the white shore of the shivering sea. The great slopes below were thickly forested and blanketed in snow and ice. She could see the pale smoke of cooking fires and the vast black clouds which accompanied the foe. They are not far at all, are they? Neferata clasped her shoulder. No. From here, I can see what's left of my old harbour. My grandfather told me stories about it, about the riches and spices and strange animals that could be seen on the wharfs in the days before the Great Awakening, of violet-feathered birds from the Skull Isles, and the great bats which the men of Geist bred for war. Yes, Neferata said, it was a thing of glory in its time, before Nagash came striding south and smashed it all to bits. A great Darklands, such as this part of the realm had never seen. It played host to the ice fleet of King Elig Venfen, which sailed to the Rime Isles and beyond, unto the very edge of the realm itself. Neferata stretched out her hand, drawing shapes on the frosty air. The Rictus were mighty in their day. She looked at Tamra. They could be again.
I know this, Tamra said, but I doubt I will live to see it.
Doubt is the whetstone of hope, Neferata said. She squeezed Tamra's shoulder gently. Come, time is of the essence. We must make ready, for the foe will be here soon.
How soon?
Neferata hesitated.
Hard to say. Days, maybe. A week.
A month. But sooner rather than later. The trap is baited, and now we must ensure that the jaws will slam shut properly. Tamra bristled at the thought of her people as bait, but she held her tongue. To serve in life and in death, that was the law, and she would serve.
She looked at the cave. Is this his lair, then, the Prince of Crows?
As she spoke, she heard a call from the trees. Carrion birds waited in the branches, watching. It was said that such creatures were the eyes of Nagash, for wherever there were carrion birds, so too there were the dead. What they saw, the Undying King saw.
That is what you call him, yes. I knew him by another name once.
Neferata looked up at the birds, her expression unreadable. He will be a strong ally if he can be made to listen to reason.
And if not? Tamra asked.
Neferata smiled.
Well, we'll see, won't we?
She turned away. Tamra followed Neferata towards the mouth of the cave. It sat high and back on the crag. The entrance resembled nothing so much as a borehole angled downwards into the depths of the crag. It was almost lost to view, hidden behind a thick copse of scraggly trees. Skulls hung from the branches on ropes of hair and dried ligament, dire warnings carved into the weather-scoured bone. She could feel ghosts watching them, murmuring softly in ancient tongues. The wind stirred the skulls, and they clacked loudly. She stopped and stared.
Scared, Poppet? Adema purred.
The Blood Knight sat atop her coal-black steed nearby, hands draped over the pommel of her saddle.
You smell like it.
The other Blood Knights chuckled softly, crimson eyes watching Tamra.
Fear keeps the mind sharp, Tamra said.
Adema smiled.
Helps with the taste as well.
Tamra turned away.
Adema laughed. Quiet, Neferata said.
She stood by the mouth of the cave, peering into the dark.
Wait here.
No matter what you hear, do not enter these caves, she continued, looking up at Adema. We will return before the moon's rise. The Blood Knight nodded, frowning.
If you're certain, my lady, she said.
If I were not, I would not be doing it, Neferata said.
She crooked a finger.
Tamra, come.
Tamra followed the Mortark dutifully. She tensed instinctively as they entered the shadowed cave. The smell of rot was thick on the air, and bones littered the ground. Animal, mostly, but some all too human, and many of those little. She gagged. The cavern sloped downwards. She heard the drip of water and the squeak of bats. As they descended, Neferata plucked a broken skull from the ground and breathed into it. The skull, now glowing with a pale radiance, lifted up from her hands and floated ahead of them. Its light cast strange shadows on the walls. Besides the water and the bats, Tamra could discern a shuffling, sliding sound. She gripped the hilt of her sword more tightly.
Why didn't we bring the others?
She murmured, fearful of speaking too loudly. One doesn't introduce a new predator into another's territory without asking. It's dangerous and rude, besides. Neferata smiled.
That's why I left Nagadron at the Mandible. One must display politesse in these situations. A lesson you'd do well to remember, sister.
Why do you call me that? We are not sisters.
Are we not? We are both members of a great sorority, Tamra Vendrak. The women who speak for the dead. Men drag the dead from their slumber and bind them, but we coax them up. We do not enslave. Instead, we command, as is our right.
Tamra shook her head. If there was a difference there, she wasn't seeing it. Neferata glanced at her and smiled.
You are my sister because I have decided such. If it displeases you, I shall not call you that again.
Does it displease you? Tamra hesitated.
No, she said finally. It is a great honour.
And it was. For was Neferata not Mortark of blood, the sword of Nagash and castellan of his citadels? Her name echoed through the histories of every kingdom, and her hand had guided the fates of untold billions, both living and dead. Neferata laughed.
There are some who would disagree, I assure you.
The echoes of her amusement bounced from wall to ceiling, setting bats to flight. She stopped.
Ah, look, sister. What do you see?
By the light of the floating skull, Tamra could see images painted on the walls of the cavern. They were primitive, but somehow recognizable. Drawn to them despite herself, she stepped closer. They showed wars, famines and feasts, victories and defeats, crudely rendered by uncertain hands.
Are these? What are they?
A record of ancient times, the story of those who inhabit these caves and how they came to be here. Rocks clattered as Neferata continued on. Tamra turned to follow, though not without some reluctance.
What do you know of those days? Neferata asked.
Of the foolish ambition of High King Taron and his five cousins and their final stand here.
My mother told me tales of Queen Issa and her brother Rykan, Tamra said, stumbling after Neferata.
She could hear the whispering of the broken kings rising up out of the dark. She and Neferata were close to where they had been entombed, and their voices were clearer now. She could also make out the words. Not the usual implorations, these, but instead...
warnings?
Neferata's hand on her shoulder startled her. The vampire had moved behind her so quickly that Tamra hadn't noticed. Riken the Handsome and Isa the Wise, the Mortark said. The children of Arek Vendrak, left to rebuild his clan in the wake of Nagash's invasion. And what do you know of them?
Riken vanished in the third year after the Great Awakening. Some say he tried to kill Nagash in order to free his father's spirit.
Yes, Neferata said. The handsome ones are always a bit foolish. The Drak were better left to Isa at any rate. They didn't call her the Wise for nothing.
I am descended from her, Tamra said proudly. It was she who composed the 9 rites of revivification and taught us how to keep the Deadwalkers at bay after the Great Awakening.
And I taught her, Neferata said. Tamra paused.
How old are you?
She asked before she could stop herself. Neferata laughed.
Older than these hills and younger than the seas, she frowned. And sometimes I think I am older even than that.
Tamra made to reply, but a sudden thrill of cold ran through her. She stopped, eyes searching the shadows. Vague shapes, clad in ancient armour and robes of archaic cut, beckoned to her from out of the darkness. Their broken skulls glowed with witchfire, and their voices swelled like thunder.
Free us! Free us! Daughter of our daughter, free us. Do not listen to her. Queen of lies, free us.
Be silent, Neferata snapped. We did not come here to speak to the dead.
The broken kings receded sullenly. Tamra had not thought that ghosts could be offended, but these plainly were.
They are retreating.
You hear them as well, don't you? Neferata asked. At Tamra's hesitant nod, she smiled.
I thought as much. You are more sensitive than the others. They can call up the dead, but you can also hear them. That is good.
I wish they would be silent, Tamra said.
Why? If their cries bother you so much, tell them so. Silence them.
Tamra looked at her.
I do not have such power.
Don't you? If you can hear them, then they can hear you. Speak, bid them be silent, as I did. Here, I will help.
Cool fingertips were pressed to Tamra's temples. Her heart sped up as Neferata leaned close and murmured,
Relax your mind. Let them in. They cannot harm you, not while I am here.
Tamra closed her eyes and forced herself to do as Neferata said. In her mind's eye she saw crackling amethyst skeins stretching down into the roots of the mountain and heard the rush of voices like bat wings fluttering against the inside of her skull.
Free us. No, be silent, Tamra said.
And Neferata echoed her.
Be still. No, no, speak the words. Shatter our chains. I said be still,
she grated, pressing back against the sudden surge of pressure. They clawed at her mind, demanding and pleading. She lashed out, letting her anger heat the blade of her disdain. A thin scream, as if from some animal, greeted her blow, and the voices receded with a sound like leaves whirling down a culvert. When she came back to herself, she was panting from the exertion. She felt wrung out, and every limb trembled.
They are strong.
Neferata released her and stepped back. In life, they were steeped in the stuff of death. The first of your folk to learn the secrets Nagash guarded so jealously for so long. I suppose Arkan told you to ignore them. Tamra nodded.
He said they were oathbreakers.
Of course he did.
For Arkan, the world is a muddle of absolutes.
That is his prerogative, as the mouthpiece of a god. For the rest of us, well, things are not always that simple. Neferata caught one of Tamra's braids and gave it a gentle tug. Once, 6 kings, brothers all and rulers of 6 mighty kingdoms, sought to challenge Nagash. They thought power was their due, that it was theirs by dint of the sweat on the brows of their forebears. And so, when Nagash claimed these lands for his own, they sought to hold what they had.
What we have, we hold,
Tamra said softly. Neferata smiled. Yes. 6 stood against the Undying King, and 6 great kingdoms were broken into 600 petty, squabbling fiefdoms. All that power, once concentrated, was diffused. A good policy for peacetime, but a bad one when the winds of war blow anew.
What do you mean?
It is time for that power to once again be consolidated. Not 600, not even 6, but 1. Neferata held up her fist. The time for debate, for argument with equals, has passed. Now is the time for swift action. Do you understand? Tamra swallowed.
No.
Neferata chuckled. It sounded to Tamra like the contented rumble of a tigress fresh from the kill. I think you do. You hear the dead, Tamra Vendrak, so listen to me now. You alone, of your fellow chieftains, have stood firm against the enemy in the field. You alone have survived where countless others have fallen, never to rise again. It is you whom the broken kings beg for their freedom, not Balgu or the witch Mayan.
I will not free them, Tamra said quickly.
Nor did I imply that you should. But do you not think that the fact is significant? Neferata circled her, trailing long fingers across the nape of her neck. Love is earned, but power must be taken, sister. That is where the broken kings made their mistake, and where your fellow chieftains make theirs. They, like Arkan, see the world as an absolute. Thus it is, and thus it must ever be. But when Nagash came, the old order was overthrown, and a new order raised up.
And now?
And now new is old, and must give way as its predecessor did. Neferata leaned close, and Tamra shivered at the unnatural chill which radiated from the vampire's flesh.
I will not break the law of Nagash. I cannot.
And what is the law? Serve Nagash in life and in death. How will you serve him, as you are? Chieftain of a scattered tribe, one voice amongst many. You hide your power, refusing the path fate has laid out for you. Neferata's fingers played across Tamra's throat, and her cheeks, spider-light touches. I understand more than you can know, but there is a time to rage against fate, and a time to accede to it. Tamra stepped away from the vampire. Neferata's eyes glowed like those of a beast in the dimness of the cavern.
Even if I did, what would be the use? She said quickly. The Rictus have neither the numbers nor the discipline to make even a single army. Those days died with the broken kings.
Her words echoed strangely in the cavern, and she had the impression that someone or something other than Neferata was listening. She heard a soft skittering in the dark, and she felt her hackles rise in a sudden premonition. Did they? I think not. And even if they did, what is death to you or I? Neferata laughed. Besides, the Rictus are greater than you imagine. Whole armies crouch in these lightless tunnels, waiting for the call to war. She clapped her hands together,
and all at once they were limned with an amethyst fire. Purple light swelled to fill the cavern. Tamra stared about her in dawning horror. The sudden radiance revealed hundreds of monstrous shapes surrounding them, either on the floor or clinging to the walls. There was no need to seek out the ghoul tribes, it seemed.
The corpse eaters,
she spat, reaching for her sword. Neferata caught her wrist. More than that, Tamra Vendrak. These are your kin. They too are Rictus, though greatly altered by time and the magic radiating from the tombs of the broken kings. Who do you think painted those murals? Now be silent. Tamra did as Neferata commanded, biting back a denial. The Rictus respected death in all its permutations, but corpse-eaters were slaves to it. Her people occasionally consumed the flesh of enemies, but only in ritual fashion and at certain times of year. And they never cracked the bones or rooted in entrails like a forest pig. But ghouls were beasts, and worse than beasts. The Drac hunted them with dogs and fire in the weaning season.
Who comes hither?
A guttural voice called out.
Speak, lest we slay thee.
It spoke in an archaic dialect, and Tamra could only just understand it. She had not imagined such creatures could talk. The thought of it sent a shiver down her spine.
You may try, by all means, Neferata replied. Who are you to demand my name?
We are Rictus, and these ramparts are ours.
And I am Neferata, Chatelaine of Gallowdeep Manse, and Voivode of the Nightlands.
She spread her arms, her hands still wreathed in crackling purple flames. Do you still wish to challenge me? A sudden hush fell over the scuttling shapes, and they drew back as one, away from the light and from her. Neferata nodded in satisfaction.
I see you still know me. Good. That will make this easier. Where is he? Where is the Prince of Crows?
Here, O Queen of Blood.
Tamra whipped around. The voice had come from close behind her. She drew her sword, but not swiftly enough. Strong hands gripped her throat and bore her backwards. She struck the ground painfully and let out a cry. A monstrous face glared down into hers, every scar and wrinkle illuminated by the light from Neferata's hands.
Aye, sir?
The monster said in evident confusion.
Is that you, Aisa?
Get off her, Riken. She is not yours, Neferata snarled.
She booted the creature in the face, knocking it sprawling.
Touch her again. Touch anything I have claimed without my permission, and I will burn your pestiferous kingdom to ashes.
Riken swept out a long arm, driving Neferata back.
Who are you to lay claim to anything, Queen of Lies? These lands are mine. I am High King of the Rictus, son of Arik Vendrak, and last prince of the Sudden Reach.
Tamra froze. It couldn't be, could it? She stared at the feral monstrosity, trying to discern his features beneath the filth of ages. The ghoul king righted himself and crouched, ready to attack.
These lands are mine to guard until such time as Nagash forgive us our trespasses.
He continued. And will that forgiveness be forthcoming when you blithely attack his messenger?
Messenger?
The creature's eyes narrowed.
Then he has absolved you of your crimes?
What crimes would those be, Riken?
The ghoul king threw back his head and howled. The others joined him until the cavern reverberated with their caterwauling. Tamra clapped her hands over her ears and squeezed her eyes shut, trying to block out the abominable sound. The ghoul king lowered his head and spread his arms.
You know your crimes, woman, even as I know mine. For them I was left to make a kingdom here, in the dark, with the last of my father's courtiers. We stand watch over our fathers and keep them still.
Then you are doing a very bad job of it, for I've been hearing them for days, Neferata said, whining like whipped dogs, begging to see the light of the moons once more. High King, you rule nothing. The world has moved on and left you in the dust.
Do not listen to her, Aisa,
Riken said, glaring at Tamra.
It was her honeyed words which set our fathers on the road to ruin. It was she, the mistress of all lies, who pricked the ambition of the great kings and pitted them against Nagash. And all for what?
You tell me, Prince of Groves. It's your story, after all. Neferata smiled serenely. And what a lovely fable it is. If I were at fault for even half of what I'm blamed for, surely Nagash would have struck me down long before now.
And where is Nagash?
The Ghoul King said. He lifted his crooked, ape-like arms over his bestial head.
Not here. He too is dust, I think, as you will be, Queen of Lies.
He tensed.
I will rend you and make bread from your bones to feed my people.
The ghouls set up a clamour at that, cheering on their monstrous king. Tamra looked around, filled with an atavistic dread by the sound. The whispers of the broken kings returned, more urgent than before. If the ghouls attacked, she might have no choice but to free them. Neferata spread her arms. Then step forward, by all means. Her smile widened, and her fangs gleamed in the violet light bleeding from her hands. Riken growled and stepped towards her, claws raised. All around them, the watching ghouls began to slap the walls and floor of the cave, filling the air with a harsh rhythm. No! Tamra said, without thinking. She stepped between them, hands raised. We don't have time for this! Heart hammering, she locked eyes with the Prince of Crows, willing him to listen. He snarled, but subsided.
Step aside, Aisa, the Ghoul King said. I would not see you harmed on her account.
No one will be harmed here, Tamra said. She looked at Neferata. We came for help, not to settle old scores. Mind your tongue, sister. I am no Dwardin to nurture petty grudges like a child. He insulted me, and I will not stand for it. Neferata's hand fell to the hilt of the long, curved dagger thrust through her belt. And you insult me, Tamra said softly. Neferata blinked. I understand now why you brought me. He calls me Aisa, as you did. Did you think I would not remember? Neferata smiled and inclined her head. I am found out. I fear I've grown less subtle in these trying times. Or perhaps you are simply wiser than your years. Riken lurched forwards, talon tips digging into the sleeves of Tamra's coat.
Do not listen to her, Aisa. Her words are barbed to catch the unwary. She flatters with one side of her mouth, even as she curses with the other.
Tamra forced herself to meet the demented creature's eyes. He stank of madness and spoiled meat. Maybe so, she said. But she is our ally.
Ours?
You are High King, and your people need you once more.
My people?
The Rictus clans stand ready to follow you, my lord. Our lands are beset by invaders from the south, spreaders of disease and worshippers of the plague. Their numbers stretch across the horizon, and the thud of their drums shakes the ice from the highest crags. She spoke quickly, giving him no time to question. You've heard of them, I know. Sound carries fast in these hills. They destroy all in their path and harry our people.
Invaders,
he repeated dully.
Who would dare invade us? Our lands are mighty, and our armies mightier still. No, no, this is a trick. I am king, and my royal decree is this. Death! Take her!
He said,
flinging out a claw to indicate Neferata. He hauled Tamra back.
One side, sister. Our kin scream in the dark for the blood of she who betrayed them, and we will have our fair due.
No!
Tamra said. Desperate, she drew her sword and held the edge beneath his throat. The Ghoul King paused, eyes wide.
Aye, sir. Who taught you to use a sword?
My name is Tamra Vendrak. I am not Aysa, though I am descended of her line.
She reached out and gestured, calling on the spirits of those who had died in the caverns. The bones strewn across the cavern floor began to rattle.
I am your ally, as is Neferata. You must listen.
Ally? We need no allies such as her. She is sand and fog. Better to scatter her to the night than seek to build upon her good nature.
Neferata laughed.
Your time grabbing in the midden pits has addled you, Prince of Crows. You think Nagash will forgive this?
Nagash is dead, and all his slaves with him, I think. Else you would not risk coming here and spinning pretty words of alliance. Nagash is dead. Thus go all tyrants.
The Ghoul King leered at her.
We are free.
He swatted Tamra's sword away with inhuman speed and leapt for Neferata. The Mortark shrieked and reached for the curved dagger sheathed on her hip as the rest of the ghouls closed in. Tamra stumbled back and flung her will out into the bones, willing them to rise. They clattered upright, but only for a moment. She clutched her head and screamed as her will was snuffed in an instant. The dead collapsed back into oblivion.
No.
The word echoed through the vaulted cavern, sending bats into panicked flight. Tamra staggered back against a stalagmite, her head aching. Ghouls wailed and fell grovelling, or else fled into the darkness as the walls cracked and stalactites speared down to splinter across the floor. A pale purple radiance spilled from the growing cracks in the cave walls.
No. Freedom is an illusion, an aberration. The natural order is maintained. You belong to me, Riken Vendrak.
No,
Riken mewled. He threw up his talons in denial as rock shifted, contorting itself into a new and more horrible shape. The intensity of the amethyst light grew, bathing the entire cavern. Tamra stared in horrified fascination as part of the cavern wall twisted into the shape of a titanic skull. The great jaws moved.
Yes, I see all. I hear all. Nagash is all.
Nagash!
Tamra breathed. His will weighed on hers like a mountain, crushing all thought and desire into base servitude. She wanted to crawl before him, to grovel as the ghouls were doing. It was only that he had not yet noticed her that allowed her to retain her dignity. To be ignored thus seemed at once a blessing and a curse. How much more painful, more wonderful must it be to have his full attention upon you?
My lord, Neferata said, a most timely intervention.
Neferata, my Mortark of blood, my queen of mysteries. Why do you cloud your mind? What do you hide from me?
A woman must have her secrets, my lord, Neferata said.
She did not look directly at the leering skull, Tamra noticed, though whether due to fear or simple caution, she couldn't say.
I could take them from you.
Yes.
Neferata knelt, arms spread, head thrown back.
Do as you will.
The glow blazed brightly, but only for a moment. As it faded, Tamra felt the titanic presence fade with it. Riken lay on the ground, curled into a ball and whimpering. Neferata rose slowly. She was trembling.
You said he was gone,
Tamra said, her voice hoarse with fear.
He is, mostly.
Neferata shook herself.
What remains is still impressive, however.
She nudged the insensate ghoul king with her foot. Up, dog! We have a battle to plan. The Rotbringer camp sprawled across the diseased remains of a village. Its former inhabitants had either drunk from the fly-blown chalice and accepted the blessings of Nurgle, or they now decorated one of the many impaling stakes, which the Order's armsmen raised with much gusto and mirth about the camp. Great tents of hide, silk and scale squatted on the frozen ground, and in the largest of these, the Knights of the Order gathered.
The Root Kings came for us then, in their tangled phalanxes,
Sir Balagos said, as he took a long slurp from his rankle wine. He held court amongst his fellow knights, as he often did, sharing tales of triumph and treachery.
They erupted from the lower levels of the Palace of Roots like termites spilling from a mound. Ironwood shields arrayed in serpentine fashion, the ranks of the Duardin undulated, curving forward and coiling back. We knew, with a certainty born of controlled despair, that they would squeeze us like a boil should they close with us. Here was a pretty challenge, and one we rose to meet.
Balagos was a burly warrior, his immensity barely contained by the creaking facets of his rust-riddled warplate. He commanded a troop of hardy knights and a scrum of rot-riders, savages from the Velts of Gairan, who spread sickness wherever they roamed. Balagos had fought alongside Walgus in the Jade Kingdoms, rising to high rank after his part in the taking of the Palace of Roots. Festabite had heard the story often enough, but it never failed to fill him with a vicarious sense of triumph. The Root Kings had been deadly warriors, and the tangled beards of their champions still hung in a place of honour in Cankerwall. Festabite wasn't the only one eager to hear the rest of the tale. The other knights leaned forwards on their stools and benches, goblets and mugs clutched tight. It was good to hear a story of triumph, of past victories in days like these. The inside of the command tent was pleasantly stifling. Servants poured murky water over banks of coals, filling the air with a bitter steam. Chaos hounds lazed on the ground, gnawing broken bones or hunks of rotting flesh. Playful nurglings squawked and fought with each other beneath the benches, or else climbed the legs and capes of the gathered knights. It was the first chance they'd had to truly rest since the attack by the spectral ogres. The ghosts had faded with the storm, leaving behind hundreds of bodies and a wrecked camp. But the Pox Crusade